From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In his new book, A Shadow in the City, the writer Charles Bowden tells us his main character, Joey O'Shea, is tired, bone tired. O'Shea, a real man, though not his real name, has spent 23 years undercover as a narcotics agent, and he wants out. But first, he must respond one last time to the allure of the drug deal. Bowden tells us he will test himself against the very best, and as he writes, before it's done with, he will have ruined hundreds of human beings, brought unknown others under torture, and he will have left his underground world either as a corpse or as a living and breathing man. Today in the program, Charles Bowden is with us to talk about his book and his personal connection to Joey O'Shea, how the man became his own ticket out of the drug world. A Shadow in the City, after this news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In his book, A Shadow in the City, the writer Charles Bowden writes that there really is nothing strange about the illegal drug trade. He writes, it mimics other industries with contracts and deliveries and payments. And this is what both assures and bedevils Joey O'Shea. O'Shea, it's not his real name, has spent more than 20 years as an undercover narcotics agent. And while he has a natural talent or gift for it, while he's drawn to the protocol, the violence, the deal, he wants out. Somewhere along the way, O'Shea has stopped believing in what he was doing. When he found Joey O'Shea, Charles Bowden himself wanted out of his coverage, his obsession of the drug world. And with O'Shea, he's found a way out. Today in the program, Charles Bowden is joining us to talk about his book, A Shadow in the City, Confessions of an Undercover Drug Warrior. We invite you to join us along the way. 585-WEST is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Charles Bowden is a crime journalist whose work regularly appears in Harper's, GQ, and other national publications. Among his several books of nonfiction are Down by the River, Blood Orchid, and Blue Desert. His latest book, as we mentioned, is again called Shadow in the City, Confessions of an Undercover Drug Warrior. And Charles Bowden, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Did you know right away when you met Joey O'Shea that there was something, I want to say something different about him, but something wrong with him? I mean, did you notice right away that there was something, I don't know if special is the right word, but something about him?
Well, what I noticed was I'd secretly bagged a snitch, and I'm sitting in a cafe, and this guy comes roaring in, like, what am I doing with his resource? It's one of those common sort of beginnings of male relationships. It begins in an adversarial circumstance. There's something wrong with males. They tend to bond deeply with guys they get in fights with in bars.
Yeah.
And it was a variation of that. But what I learned almost instantly was that I needed him. And I needed him because he knew what I knew, and I had nobody to talk to. That I'd been, for over 10 years, sort of living in an underworld of border drugs.
Yeah.
And I found some guy that had learned what I'd learned and learned even more. And so we drifted into a friendship with no book in mind. I mean, we went on for 2 years. Sort of secretly meeting. He lives a long ways from where I live. And we would just talk for days, trying to keep our sanity.
Yeah. What was the thing what was the primary thing that connected you? Because as I said before, you both had the sense that you were drawn to, obsessed with, in love with in many ways, this world, yet you wanted to get the hell out.
It was killing both of us. What drew me to Joey O'Shea was that he was capable of something I wasn't capable of, action. He's killed people. He's been in endless firefights. But unlike most people that do that, he's very sensitive and very reflective. Let me put it this way. Almost no one who can make a perfect jump shot in basketball can describe how they did it.
Yeah.
He can. He's like a student of what he's doing. He says, he doesn't have a, has a high school education, basically, but he has an extremely bright mind. And so that was the attraction. I thought, here is a guy that can say it. Most people in that world can't say it, and he can. First, he said it to me for 2 years in conversation, and then he decided he had to destroy himself. He decided that somebody had to stop him or he was going to die from what he was doing. And so he had two options. One is what the book's about, set up the biggest heroin deal anyone's ever imagined. The second one was to bring me in, and if the Colombians failed to kill him, my book would destroy his career. Either way, he finally got a ticket out, and that's what happened, and that was on the table. I mean, we talked about it.
So you knew from the start. He said, oh, this is part of it. I'm going to use this book as a vehicle for getting me out of there.
Yes, he knew it would destroy his career.
Yeah.
Look, nobody from that world's ever talked the way he's talked. Nobody from that world takes people in. I'm in during the deal. I'm under a false identity a lot of times. There's not a sentence in the book that's fabricated or I imagine. It's all real-time, real. This is what they're saying, and it's absolute. I can't tell you how I know some things because my way of knowing is probably illegal, but it's not my imagination. This is literally off by the record, because major drug transactions are recorded, taped, there's cameras, everything. And this one's over $500 million in a year, pure heroin, street value. This was big. This one probably cost the lives and fortune of hundreds of people. At least 300 people were either murdered or destroyed in the course of this deal. He goes into it to get out of his life. I go into it to find a way out of the life I'm leading in the drug world. I'm going to write a primer. Like, you learn things in the drug world you don't learn other places, and the reason you learn them is the behavior is so extreme. There are no boundaries. There's no borders. You cross everything. You go to a place most people, praise the Lord, don't venture into. It's kind of like a war, a real war. And when you come back, you know things that are not likely to be learned. And look at Joey O'Shea's entire career in life is about one thing, a search for meaning. That's literally it. This is not a guy trying to collect scalps. This is a rare individual who was determined to find out what life was about and went to the most extreme rooms in this hemisphere to learn it. And he's bright enough to tell us. So buy the book.
I want you to read from it, if you would.
Sure.
This is a section on page 9. Not really much to say or set up, I think. Just go ahead if you would.
Okay, well, I'll read it. For more than 20 years, he has lived underground, a predator feeding off the flesh of the city. He began working in a neighborhood. Then he entered the commerce of flesh and finally found his place in the drug world. He discovered he was better than good at his work. Soon he was pulled into a group that melded local people with national talent. He's a person of no particular standing. He wears street clothes. In a hive of agents and bureaucrats, he operates independently. This is permitted because he makes deals and others can ride on the success of these deals. This suits him because he does not like being told what to do. He's killed, been in shootings, gone into rooms too many times where guns began firing, but he's never been shot. And he can't speak of these matters. There's an etiquette in his world that holds such talk obscene, a kind of bragging left to liars and to those with no morals. He can barely use the word kill, not because of a need for euphemisms, but because of the demands of silence. To take a life is bad. To speak of it is unforgivable.
There's this thread running through the book of... It's too simple to say it's kind of honor among thieves. I mean, there is a real kind of protocol, a kind of decorum, this deep abiding respect of the way people do business. He honors it. He respects it.
Okay. He likes drug dealers better than cops. He likes drug dealers better than cops because drug dealers take care of their families. They don't work 9 to 5. They work like dogs. They have to keep their deals or they get killed. So he finds them honorable men and women. He just doesn't like what drugs do.
Yeah.
But, yes, this is a guy who has a voodoo altar that's 6 foot high in his federal office with a coffin. This is a guy who no one sits within 25 yards of him in his federal office. Everyone's afraid of him. This is a guy who in this unnamed metropolitan area in the book made 50% of all the drug cases, one guy. This guy was a one-man war. He worked 7 days a week, he worked day and night, and he had a genius for it, and so he became trapped. This is a guy who, when I asked him, just what are you, said, I'm a predator who hunts other predators. And this is a guy who finally bankrupted himself morally and had to get out. That's when I accidentally showed up.
He calls his work sacred. There's a part in the book where you write, he hates publicity because it violates the work, makes it dirty. And here's an important turn of phrase here, self-indulgent. It's something he can't bear, is the yes. something that's not pure and right. Or, no, true or authentic, maybe.
It makes it dirty.
Yeah.
It's like if you I once knew a man who I knew gave $1 million to Mother Teresa, but he would not tell me the sum because it would contaminate the act of that of giving.
Yeah.
Yes, it's that way. Look, this is a clean guy that he has known 43 fellow officers who have been killed. He has partners in the cemetery. He has partners paralyzed for life. He has partners emotionally destroyed. This is not a person who has any fantasies about the drug life or the world, but he has an intense need for meaning. He thinks life has to have a moral meaning. And so counting coups, saying, I beat someone, that doesn't matter. That he respects the people he destroys. And you have to realize there are thousands of human beings he's destroyed. He's made over 1,000 drug busts alone. He's filled entire penitentiaries. And when you deal with the Colombians, like in this book,
yeah.
and he destroys these two networks, well, everybody connected to the people that goes down that went down probably was killed. In Colombia, if you screw up, it's not just that you die. Your mom dies, your dad dies, your wife dies, your children dies. There's a heavy price, and he has to have that on his conscience. And he's a decent man. He won't deny what he's done. He knows he has to pay for this.
You know, you early on in the book, you talked about him having this deep search for meaning, and you're trying to figure out as you're reading just what it is that Joey O'Shea wants, because it's not entirely clear, because this is not about justice. Clearly, it's not about money for him. He doesn't need the money, doesn't really care about the money. And there's a way in the book, I want to point you here, and I'll just have you read this, because
I like to be led.
Yeah. This section here, you can see marked.
Yes.
He's looking for beauty. Read that and then talk about
it. Yeah, we should say he taught himself to paint.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's in the blood, he thinks. Joey O'Shea moves in on 30. He's growing a world in the streets, and yet this feeling gnaws at him, the sense of something not being fed by his life. He wants beauty, color, form, something that whispers magic to him. He has honed his abilities with a gun, with an ice pick. He can read the souls of others by a glance into their eyes. He knows his market and its needs. He's plowed through books on chemistry and the brain night after night to comprehend both his products and his customers. And most important, he is rising from where he came and now stands on ground he never even dared to dream he might reach. He's in a crew. His life is action. His body is hard and swings through people around him like an axe. That's all true. I mean, you'd have to be around him. Other cops are afraid of him. That some people are always willing to die, and if you have that willingness, you have a lot of control over whoever you're dealing with. At the same time, this is a guy who tells me the greatest his favorite book in the world is To Kill a Mockingbird. This is a guy who tells me the greatest American novel is Huckleberry Finn. This is a guy who drops $500 or $1,000 to have an injured crow repaired and returned to the wild. He's also a guy I almost saw kill someone in less than a second, because he also taught me that, never hesitate, that every dead cop he knows hesitated for just a fraction of a second. What he said is, none of this hold up your hand stuff, pump every round in him, just take him out if you think you're in danger. He's not a simple person in the way we like to view people. But he's a sensitive person. He's paid a terrible price. See, when he started in what we call the drug war, he thought drugs had to be absolutely evil because they enslaved people. And what happened to him is he spent so many years down there alone, he's like a Rambo we sent out on a lost patrol, that he got to know that the people he were destroying were not any worse than he was. He got to know their families and everything else, and he gradually ceased to believe in what he was doing And he realized, he sat me down one day and said, I have been running in the streets here for over 20 years, undercover, and every drug in this city now is more available, it's cheaper, and it has higher quality. That's what I've accomplished with my life. That's what my dead friends accomplished, that this war is lost, that using cops to deal with drugs doesn't work, that we have to deal with it as some sort of public health problem. And, you know, it's not easy for a man who have lost his friends, sacrificed the best years of his life, and just say this is hopeless. So he's an honest guy.
Charles Bowden is with us. His new book is called Shadow in the City, Confessions of an Undercover Drug Warrior. Bowden will be reading from his book tonight at 7 o'clock as part of a book release party at Ken Sanders Rare Books. For more information, you can visit us online at KUER.org or call Ken Sanders at 521-3819. We invite you to join us if you like. 585 West is our number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us Charles Bowden. He's talking to us about his latest book, maybe his last word on the culture of the drug world. For nearly a decade, Bowden has been exploring and writing about the illegal drug trade. When he met a narcotics agent, Joey O'Shea, not his real name, he realized that both men wanted the same thing. They wanted out. As we mentioned, O'Shea is not his real name. He had spent more than 20 years undercover, and as he examined his life and his work, he realized he had stopped believing in what he was doing. But as Bowden points out, it's not a story about the drug problem. It's a story of the human heart. A Shadow in the City is the name of the book, Confessions of an Underground Drug Warrior. And Charles Bowden is joining us. We invite you to join us. 585 West is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. He's a good liar.
Consummate. He lies all the time like a horse thief. And all these guys are.
But he's great at it. I mean, he's learned something about human nature. He understands, because this is Sonrisa, an early mentor, I guess, is the way to put it.
No, that's his hero. The guy who made him, who taught him the streets. He's never recovered from Sonrisa being murdered on the streets. He never will. It's a hole in his heart that will never heal.
And Sonrisa tells him, be yourself.
Yes.
Test your claim.
Yeah, which you don't do. You have a false name, but you don't have a false identity. If you're a guy who loves to cook Italian food, you're the guy who loves to cook Italian food. You never pretend to be something you're not because somebody will call you on it. If you pretend to be tough and you go into a room, somebody will pick up on that and see just how tough you are. So you're always yourself. You should also understand that he operated for over 20 years with the same street name. Joey O'Shea is the name he used on the street.
Really? Really?
That there are people all over this country in prisons that he destroyed who don't know he's the person that destroyed them. You set up a deal, you get the evidence, da-da-da-da, and then 8 weeks later you take the person down on a later deal, and they never associate their destruction with you. There is a woman sitting in a federal prison at this moment in this book who's been interrogated for months by DEA to give up all of her network, and she has, to cut her time, and she will be in prison a very long time. But she's never given up his name. She refuses to talk about him because she thinks that he's an actual gangster. So even to cut her time, she won't give up Joey O'Shea, the guy who destroyed her. She was 45 years old, has two children, and she's going to be a very old woman before she sees her children again. That's the kind of ability he had, and it's a terrible gift. I mean, you look at it, what a narc does is go in a room, earn the trust of others, and then betray them and destroy them. There's no other line of police work like it. And that's what you do every day. A drug deal's based on them trusting you enough to do the deal, and you reward them by destroying them. That's a toxin for narcs. Most of the guys living like Joey O'Shea last about 24 months on the street, and they have to furlough them out. Save their sanity.
Yeah.
Most of his partners lasted about that long. He stayed down there for over 20 years.
Because he loved the deal. Is that?
I think that's part of it. He loved the deal. He loved matching wits. He believed in it for years.
Yeah.
And he was good at it. He comes from a lower class background. I mean, basically, anybody just speaking normal American English, he comes from white trash. He comes from a neighborhood where everybody, almost every other family, was black, that he actually doesn't like white people, that he was raised with people of color and feels much more comfortable with them and trusts them more and likes their culture better. And he would have become a criminal, which he admits, except by fluke circumstance, when he was about 20, the local police were hiring anyone, and he got a job. Otherwise, he'd have been a criminal, because everybody he came up with in his neighborhood, in this tough city, most of his friends became criminals, drug dealers. And so his life has been an odd adventure.
You know, what I found interesting about the way you write about this, the allure of the deal, that there are certain rules, there are certain elements to a deal. Never want, he writes. Never be eager. Never care if you do a deal.
Here's the iron law in the drug world. You can never be hurt by the deal you didn't do. If you're in this dance to do a deal, and look, we're not talking about buying a nickel bag. We're talking about moving massive amounts of heroin every week from Columbia and New York to the city. You don't hurry. If something just feels a little off, there's something somebody said, just a look in their eye, go away. Because you only get one mistake. You're either going to be dead or, under our laws, go to prison for decades. Back off. Well, he loved all that. He lived in a world just like I do and you do, of kind of basic shallowness and flim-flam. But the people he's dealing with in these rooms, they're for real. They're deadly serious. They're willing to bet their life, everything, on the deal. And so he found them peers. And they found out he was very good at it. Imagine coming from a poor neighborhood with no prospects and by fluke finding out you had this one thing you were terrific at, like, you know, shooting a basket in basketball. And then giving your life to it, and then one day waking up and finding out you can't do it anymore. You've lost your belief in it. Then, you know, the book, as you know, ends, among other ways, with him getting a phone call, and the guy's got, 26 keys of pure heroin, 94% pure, and he just hangs up on him. He's done. Now, I've had that happen in my life where you realize you can't do it anymore. That's how I left newspapers. I just walked out one day and thought, I can't do this anymore. But it's a terrible feeling. Because if you look at it, most of us don't get to be good at many things. And if we find something we're good at, it's hard to leave. That's why athletes stay until their bodies are destroyed.
Yeah.
Because it's such an exhilaration to excel. Joey O'Shea is a guy who excels at everything he tries in an odd way. That he's taught himself to paint. He taught himself Spanish. He taught himself interior remodeling. So for years, when he's doing these deals, he would buy old junky houses and totally remodel them and sell them just for the exercise. He's taught himself botany. I mean, you know, you name it. Anything that interests him, he becomes a master of because he thinks he's a craftsman. He has the standards of a good cabinet maker, that you do a good job. He's an admirable man. But he's also, he believes, evil. He thinks what he did was wrong, meaning he had no right to destroy these people, that he accepted an assignment from you and I and the people listening, and that assignment was wrong. And so without my solicitation, by the end of the book, he wants to come out of the closet and publicly denounce drugs. I mean, the drug laws.
Yeah.
That he just thinks it's wrong. And by God, it's powerful when you hear it from a man who's actually had friends die right in front of him in these battles. It's not like he has some romantic view of drug guys or he thinks they're drug lords. You know, he's literally put his life on the line. This just isn't working, he thinks. Well, look, for me, the drug world is almost incidental to the book. What the book's about is exploring love and evil. That this guy goes so far and risks so much, you learn things that you don't learn if you just go out to have dinner this evening. This is life at the edge and then past the edge. You're in free fall.
And he lives on the edge of the shores of love, I guess, is your
name. Yes. Right. His favorite place, which he let me use the real name of, because there's one everywhere.
Right.
The place he goes to heal his soul and has for decades is Paradise Cove, a sort of feral inlet on a big lake full of woods where he used to be left by his parents, say, at the end of May, and they'd come back in September, and he'd sleep out under the stars all summer on his own as a 10, 11, 12-year-old kid, like Huckleberry Finn. And when he goes there, it's like being with somebody who has senses you lack. He can read every twig, every track. He's totally alive. That's what's kept him alive, among other things.
585-WEST is the number to join the conversation, 585-9378. Our email address, radio west@kuer.org. Let's take a call from Jim, who is joining us in Salt Lake. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Nice to talk to you guys. And it sounds like a very interesting book. And let me ask you a question about Joey O'Shea specifically. He said he kind of recognized that what he does is evil, but did he ever sense did he ever express a sense of frustration because, you know, he's obviously taken down these major cartels, but here we are, and those same drugs he was fighting, they're still all around us and maybe even cheaper than they were before. And you said, now, ultimately, he decided he wanted the drug laws to be changed, but I'm wondering exactly how you mean he would like them to be changed.
He thinks we should legalize drugs and teach people how to deal with them. He doesn't want anyone to take drugs. He's a guy who bench presses 390. He's a guy who runs 9 miles at 7.5 minutes a mile. But he thinks they're out there, they're in our society, they're in our bodies, and we have to develop some way of dealing with them besides imprisonment. He also thinks that what he's accomplished by enforcing the laws is pour billions of dollars every year into the hands of murderers that sell drugs. So what he wants is a total reversal, shut down the war on drugs. And look at, the war on drugs is real. Every 20 seconds, an American is arrested for a drug felony. This year, so far this year, 840,000 Americans have been busted on drugs, half for marijuana. So far this year, federal and state narcs have consumed $26 billion in salary. But he just thinks it's a waste of time. But look, he doesn't want anyone taking drugs.
Well, does he think that if it's legalized, that the violence will go away? In the end, yes.
Drugs are worthless, meaning they have almost no value. Marijuana, if it were legal, would have a market value the same as cabbage. Cocaine would probably be a dollar a gram and so forth. But, yes, he wants them legalized. Look, we had to deal with this kind of reality with alcohol. We've created a society where you can drink, but if you get drunk and scare the horses, you get in trouble. That's what he wants with drugs.
Jim, thanks.
I like the cabbage price. Thank you.
Lettuce also.
Right. 585 West. Again, the number 585-9378. Back to the phones. Dan is with us in Salt Lake. Hi, Dan.
Yeah. Hi. Hey, thanks, guys. I just called. I'm visiting here from New England State. I'm on vacation. I happened to tune into this. And I called because I have a cousin who is recently retired from the DEA. He was stationed as a head of operations in a South American country, and he would come up to spend vacations up in New England, his ancestral home. And he grew up in the southeast, Spanish-speaking with an Irish name. And so we would pepper him with questions about what it's really like living behind barbed wire, his undercover operations. And he would refer obliquely, like any good soldier in battle, to just different types of operations and just say that what you read about in the media is only a sanitized version, just the slightest sliver of what actually happens. And he tried to transition himself into law enforcement up in the Northeast, and he just couldn't do it. He just said he'd go nuts up there. He says there's nothing going on. So he went back to South America and served out, I guess, 25 years with the DEA, and he retired. And through this, a lot of what the author is talking about, I just know from my cousin how his life has gone and the types of things he's interested in. For instance, he's become quite a gardener because he needs that outlet. But his personal life is an absolute horror. We've all lost track of how many marriages he's been through, lost track of how many children he has, and yet he loves all of them. He's on the best of terms with his ex-wives. And so we stay out of that. And I know he's in some type of corporate security work down in South America now, because he can't transition himself to life in the States again.
Well,
and I was just wondering if the author has any experience about that, about what happens to these people after they retire, if they get so caught up in the life.
They drink themselves to death, they commit suicide.
Yeah,
we ask them to do something and then pretend they're not damaged by it. You can't do what we pay these people to do without being damaged. And your relative's exactly right. What you hear here, what you're told here, what you read here is sanitized. The only thing I will guarantee you is this book is not sanitized. That one of the problems for a reader in the book, or one of the realities they'll have to face, is most of the time they won't be able to believe Joey O'Shea's a cop. If you think these laws get enforced and these deals get enforced, like Law and Order on television, you're smoking some product. It's a deceitful, vicious world out there for both the cops and the dealers. And they pay a price. Nobody comes back intact. Now, Joey O'Shea is going to get his life back because of something that's in the book, that he read a book in the middle of all his killings, and he's done a lot of killing, that gave him hope, and that book's kept him alive. It's an odd book by a survivor of the Holocaust named Viktor Frankl, and it's called Man's Search for Meaning. That's the only thing that's kept him going.
Dan, we're glad you called. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
That book that he recommended to you, Joey O'Shea, along the way, you were skeptical about it at first. You figured it was just going to be...
Oh, I figured it would be a bunch of crap. You know, psychobabble, yeah. I'm okay, you're okay. Well, this bookstores in this country are full of self-centered, narcissistic garbage. Like, the entire planet was created to make sure Chuck didn't have a bad day. So he said, you have to read this book to talk to me, and I grudgingly took it and was spellbound. It's a very thin book. And what Frankl, he survived the death camps. He was an Austrian Jew. What he'd learned was that you have to take the wound and turn it to some good account, that life is about enduring suffering and yet not being broken, not being bitter, not being vicious. Life is about saying yes to life. That life doesn't give you meaning, Frankl found in the death camps. You give life meaning. And it's worth your time, that's all I can tell you. I was stunned by the book. It's brilliantly written, it's brief, and it's so honest you have to go sit on a rock for 2 days afterwards.
There's a point when I think if you're reading this book and you're sort of going along with Joey O'Shea's life, there's a moment of kind of hopelessness, I think, that you come to when you realize that you can't really solve this, that there's nothing here really to be resolved. And I guess you make a concession, and maybe this is what you've done, and maybe this is what O'Shea has done, is you concede human nature.
Yes, look, we don't have a drug problem, we have a drug reality. I can't run the world. People need drugs, and they'll go two places to get them. They'll go like Rush Limbaugh to 72 doctors at once, or they'll go out in the street, but they're going to get them. Then we have a choice, looking at their need, at their wounds. Are we going to put them in cages for trying to fix themselves, medicate themselves? Or are we going to deal with the fact they have these needs? O'Shea came to the same conclusion I did. It's gotten too big. Everybody is using drugs now, whether licit or illicit. The pharmaceutical companies are the biggest cartel in the country, in the drug dealing world. And so the game's over. Now we have to face this fact. Look, I have an 18-year-old son. I don't want him touching drugs. Nothing's stronger than coffee now that he's going to college. But that doesn't change the fact the drugs will be out there. And certainly, if he decides to try marijuana, I don't want his life ruined because they catch him with a baggie. I don't want him penalized. I've told him the truth. I don't want you smoking dope because everybody I know that smokes dope sits around and doesn't amount to a damn thing, and I want you to contribute to society. But I don't want him fixed by going being put in a cage for years.
Charles Bowden is with us. His new book is called Shadow in the City, Confessions of an Undercover Drug Warrior. He's going to be reading from the book tonight at 7 o'clock as part of a book release party at Ken Sanders Rare Books. For more information, just visit us online at KUER.org, or you can call the bookstore at 521-3819. We invite you to join us. 585-WEST is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the writer Charles Bowden. His latest book is called A Shadow in the City, Confessions of an Undercover Drug Warrior. You can join us at 585 West, 585-9378, our email address radiowest@kuer.org. Joey O'Shea has seen a lot of, inexplicable violence and incredible cruel acts. But there's, I was looking for this maybe moment of epiphany, this transformation where he finally makes that decision he wants out. And I saw it in some ways in a snuff film talk about that.
There's a drug bust in the book. While they're collecting the evidence, they find a videotape. They pop the videotape into a player, and it's the drug dealer killing a 16-year-old girl for 28 minutes. And it's real because they realize, looking at the girl, that they found her body in that city. Yeah. And Joey O'Shea watched it once, and I've watched it once. And it's like visiting the heart of evil. And, of course, what you're visiting when you visit evil is a part of your own self that you've kept under control, that it lurks in all of us. Just like the Holocaust didn't come from Mars, it came from decent people in Europe who went nuts. And so I've never recovered from watching that thing, and neither has he, and I'll tell you why. There's some things about us as human beings you don't want to know. And when you watch her slowly being tortured and killed for 28 minutes, you have to face it, and you can't handle it. That I will go to my grave with images of Popsicle, a 16-year-old prostitute, being slowly strangled, burning in my brain. But that's one of the gifts. Joey O'Shea went through hell, so now we have a description of hell. I don't want to go there where he went. I've been to parts of it, but I'll let him own the domain. Now we have a report, not only of what it's like out there, but what we can learn about ourselves so we're not like that, so we don't behave that way, so we don't kill for fun. And the guy who did the killing went down on a drug bust. The tape, for various reasons, wasn't admissible, and so he's just doing a stretch for selling drugs. And if there's one obsession I have left in the drug world, I share with Mr. O'Shea, which is not a nice obsession, but as they say now, I will share it with you, is to gather enough evidence to put that guy on the gurney for what he did to that little girl. And I don't believe in capital punishment. Shows you what happens out there.
You get the feeling that we get the closest to Joey Shea when we understand his love of the water. He tells himself in the book, you write this, he tells himself, I love swamps, creeks, oceans, I love water. And I love this part about it. Finally, he writes, I love floating.
Yes, he has this dream. He's a very handy man. He can build anything. He's going to build a stone room. And in the room, there'll be no light except on the ceiling. There'll be a simulation of the constellations at night. And all you'll hear is water flowing in the room. And you'll float in this warm water. There'll be beautiful music, and the room will have scent. Everything with Joey O'Shea has scent. You can name a person, boom, like that, and Joey O'Shea will describe the scent of the person. It's like knowing a genius is a dog or something. So he's going to build this room and go in it and just float and look at the stars, because he thinks life does have meaning. He thinks we came from stardust, in his terms, and that we belong to something that's greater than ourselves. I won't say he's religious in the sense that it's going to be like visiting a minister, but he's religious in the sense that he believes in life, even though he's lived death. He is now looking for a parcel of land, because he researches everything, in a county in the United States with the highest star clarity every night, so he can sit out there and look at stars when he retires. Naturally, it's an unpopulated place. But yes, he's in touch with his better self, and he thinks for decades, in the guise of this crusade, this war, he betrayed himself, and now he's trying to heal, and in a sense, make amends. In the book, he destroys a woman who falls in love with him. That's the woman who's doing prison time and won't give up his name, because she thinks he's her sweetheart. She doesn't know that she's in a cage for most of the rest of her life because of him. Well, he has to live with that, and he's candid enough and decent enough not to deny it. And now he's quit. He's finishing out his career solving murders, because as he told me, no matter what anybody tells you, murder's always wrong.
585 West is the number to join us. 585-9378. Our email address, again, radio west@kuer.org. Let's go to Jefferson, joining us on the line in Salt Lake City. Jefferson, welcome.
How's it going? Great show today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I hate to get off the mark, but I want to come back to the policy of legalizing drugs, and I'm interested in if you want to talk a little bit about sort of the Amsterdam example as a social experiment for that sort of policy.
I don't think that's viable for us, and I'll tell you why. It's like, you know, every Swiss house has a gun and they don't kill people. If you want to know what will happen when we legalize drugs, meaning for us, Americans, we have an exact example, the end of Prohibition. What happened was hyperviolence for about 3 years because we destroyed an industry that criminals were in, and all the John Dillingers and all these people basically were exterminated in the 30s because to keep their standard of living going, like good Americans, they decided if I can't sell booze, I'll take money from banks. The same thing will happen here. The second thing that will happen is, contrary to myth, people drank less during Prohibition than afterwards, because naturally you couldn't find it at every minute of the day or night. So drug use will also go up when we legalize drugs. But here's what won't happen. We won't have the highest prison population in the year. We won't have tens of billions of dollars or hundreds of billions of dollars going into criminal hands. We won't have our fellow citizens who, because of needs that I don't have and possibly you don't have, being turned into criminals because they self-medicate themselves for low self-esteem or depression. And we won't have nearly the gore we have now. We will have this firefight as these networks suddenly are unemployed and don't want to go back to flipping burgers and have to be destroyed. But in the end, we'll also have a more honest society. There's something wrong with the country where everybody consumes drugs, and yet you say it's illegal. I mean, this kind of hypocrisy poisons you in the long run. And in the end, we'll develop a kind of immunity to drugs, like with alcohol. Alcohol is a curse in our society. Nobody is showing up at ER on Saturday night because her husband had a joint. They're showing up at ER because he had a drink. But we've learned to live with this because it's less damaging than what we did to ourselves in Prohibition when we created a gangster culture. So that's what will happen, if it answers your question. The drugs will never go away. You can't unring the bell. People take drugs because they make them feel better, and you can't unteach them that. They're going to get them. We'll just have to create norms of behavior. You can do this, but you can't do that at the same time. I'm one of those guys that can't drive a car if I take a contact, because I go right down to single-digit IQ with a cold tablet.
We're glad you called. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
585 West, again, the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radio west@kuer.org. So what is it, do you think, that that you share with Joey O'Shea? I mean,
Two things. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Or seven things. I'll make them up. One, we're both people capable of obsession. I don't know how to do things halfway. That I get obsessed. If I go into anything, I'm going to do it to the utmost of my ability. I spent 4 years on this book, which is not a cost-effective way to live. Secondly, we both love life. That I have never understood the way we organize the world. There's plants, there's animals, there's us, there's rocks. That I feel this kind of connection with everything. Not only all living things, I've never been really convinced that rocks aren't alive. That I, like Joey O'Shea, when I look up at the stars, I hear some kind of music. I don't just see gases exploding. So I have a lot in common with them. You know, I'll tell you the final thing. Here's the only real difference between Joey O'Shea and myself. I penetrate people and understand them almost completely so I can write them. He penetrates people and understands them almost completely so he can destroy them. I put it in a book. He puts you in a cage. But we have the same appetite for life. I'm an addict on trying to understand other forms of life. My idea of hell is to go to a saloon where everybody's just like me.
585 West, again, the number to join us. Back to the phones. John is with us in Salt Lake. John, welcome.
Hi, you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, hey, thanks. What a great show. I really appreciate that, and it really struck some chords for me. I have a question, but I also wanted to introduce something that I thought you didn't mention, but you sure talk a lot about, and that's spirituality, and that's something that's worked for me. But my question really is, what do you think the solution is? I did that for 8 years, and
did
my
what?
Solution turned out to be dealing with drugs and law enforcement. And my solution turned out to be working on a spiritual path and working with these people on a spiritual path. Nothing religious, just spirituality. But what do you think the larger solution is?
Well, look, people take drugs, in my opinion. Well, it's not even an opinion. I know, because there's a hole in them. The drugs fill. And what you call spirituality, which is a fair word, is a way to fill that hole. That Joey O'Shea doesn't take drugs because he can fill that hole. That I think you have to create a society where people get enough meaning from life that they don't need drugs. They don't reach for drugs. But until you do that, they're going to reach for them. So then you decide how you treat them if they use drugs. Viktor Frankl, when he wrote the book, deliberately left out any discussion of God. And I'll tell you why. Not because he didn't believe in God, but because he didn't think the answer was dependent on whether you believed or not. The answer was dependent on whether you said yes to life or not. And if you said no to life, you were going to die. And if you said yes to life, you were going to live. Because what he noticed in the camps was that perfectly healthy people would one day give up and be dead in days, and that the people that kept saying yes made it through. Now, his wife died, his father died, his mother died, but he survived. So Viktor Frankl brought back, at a very high price, this message. And I think what you're calling spirituality is sensible. People have to have some way to say yes to life. And if they find it in church or they find it in a walk in the woods, either way is fine. What you don't want to do is set up a barrier that if you don't believe this, you can't be saved. Then we'll lose too many.
John, thanks for the call.
Outstanding. I look forward to reading your book.
Well, good. I need more people like you.
Take care.
585 West is the number, 585-9378. You know, he said that to say yes to life, but this is what's so complex about Joey O'Shea. You get these moments when you're not entirely clear if he wants, in fact, to say yes to life, because he does have a goal that you describe in the book, a darker goal. One, you're right, he keeps to himself. It's a whisper in his head. That is, he wants to find someone to end it for him.
Yes. Well, the book is how he finds his way back to himself. The book is his recovery. When I started the book, it's in real time. What happens is what happened. I didn't know he was going to leave his career. I didn't know this would be the last case, that he couldn't do it anymore. There nothing in the book was known until it happened, and I'm there when it's happening, largely.
So what, he's at the bottom at this point, then?
The only reason he let me into his life was he needed me like I needed him. We were both at a personal bottom because of living in this world. And the book became an act of improv. What's in the book is an act of improvisation as he found his way back to life. And I can't give you the details, but he's back.
Well, you write this. At this point, again, you get this sense of despair. He wants someone to end it for him, and you write this. He must be beaten by someone intelligent. He must be finished by someone cold, a fellow predator. He must meet someone who is better at killing than Joey O'Shea. And there's one final condition. He does not want to die.
That's right.
That's an important point.
No, he doesn't. This is a guy who goes out early in the morning and puts plants in the ground. This is not a cynic. In fact, if you want to know the key to Joey O'Shea, think of him as a four-year-old boy with that vulnerability. He still carries that within him. I've seen him weep. I've seen him recount something like when we were speaking earlier of that terrible execution of that girl and break down. But he's only done it when we were alone, you know. that he's not a psychopath or these words we use to dismiss people. He feels things. What he is a person who has a strength most of us don't have, certainly I don't have, to be willing to experience things. We won't go places we won't go.
In the end, then, as you write in the book, at the bottom of your personal arc, you have to remember your former self and your better nature. And Joey Oshie was able to do that.
Well, we both were, I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, we keep in touch with each other like recovering alcoholics, you know. I mean, as we start reassembling our life, he spent 20-odd years, I spent 15-odd years in this kind of environment. And I can't learn anymore, and I can't bear anymore, so hell, now I'm going to write about Bambi or something. You know?
But the drug world, no more. That's it for you.
No, well, there's nothing. Look, the war is over. If you want to continue destroying your fellow citizens with these laws, I can't stop you, you know. But we're way past it. There is no one listening to this program who thinks drug users are them. Everybody now has it in their family. Everybody has lost people. Everybody has a nephew, cousin, something. This isn't the other side of town. This is us now. And we got to get honest about it. Stop thinking, well, we'll throw more money at it. It isn't working.
Charles Bowden. His new book is called Shadow in the City, Confessions of an Underground Drug Warrior. Bowden will be reading from his book tonight at 7 o'clock as part of a book release party at Ken Sanders Rare Books. For more information, visit us online at KUER.org or just call Ken Sanders Bookstore, 521-3819. Charles Bowden, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks for having me, and for the people listening, you all come down tonight.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Mike Anderson. Our thanks to Jenny Badger. Radio West is produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.